Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Andrew Johnson of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you as usual. Andrew, we actually start with a good martini from MSNBC. I'm going to tell you now, that's not real common.
I'm excited to hear it then.
Well, there's this show they have in the afternoon called The Cycle. They have several people on the panel, so we know at least that many people watch it. One of them is Crystal Ball, who at one time ran for Congress in Virginia, got handily defeated, but now she's on this panel. But she had a very interesting commentary, I think this was on Wednesday's program, about the whole Hillary Clinton rollout of her book and, of course, the interviews that have gotten a lot of attention, most notably for her saying that she and Bill Clinton were dead broke when they left the White House. Then there was the tough interview she had with Terry Gross at NPR about how, when, and why she changed her position on the definition of marriage. And she had an interesting Benghazi confrontation with Diane Sawyer, of all people. So Crystal Ball with an interesting comparison here that Republicans may find fascinating and irritating at the same time.
As I've watched all of this unfold, I've begun asking myself an uncomfortable question. Is Hillary Clinton our Mitt Romney? Smart, sure. Competent, absolutely. Incredible resume, without a doubt. But also kind of tone deaf and unrelatable. I mean, be honest. Didn't Hillary's dead broke comment make you think just for a second about Mitt saying Ann drives a couple of Cadillacs or that he likes firing people? The real Hillary didn't just lose in 2008 because of her vote on Iraq. In fact, the Iraq vote and her inability to say she was wrong were symptoms of the core problem in her campaign, a problem that was also at the center of Romney's campaign. She exuded competence, but with no core belief. It seemed like the real answer to why she was running for president was simply because she wanted to be president.
As much as some on the right were lukewarm towards Romney, I think they'd definitely prefer him to Hillary. But it's interesting that a lot of folks on the left, Andrew, not only have residual ill will towards Hillary because of the fierce Democratic debate from 2008, but they just don't see her being able to connect with people.
Yeah, I mean, I'm usually pretty hesitant to accept Crystal Ball's analysis, given that her book report on Animal Farm said it was about the excesses of capitalism. But here, I actually think she has a pretty interesting point, and it's not the first time people like Ball and others have raised issues with Hillary Clinton. Actually, Crystal Ball, a few months ago, had brought up that she'd rather see Elizabeth Warren run. There's sort of some progressive dissatisfaction with Hillary. I mean, and comments like this seem pretty tone deaf. It's sort of hard to see why they're very different from the 47% comment. And you have a lot of people in Clinton land that are sort of bending over backwards to justify it. One of her former aides, I think it was Kiki McLean, sort of saying like, well, you know, Hillary, when she was in the White House, she had a different set of expectations leaving it. So it's reasonable that she would think she was dead broke at the time. That just doesn't play well with a lot of people across the country, but especially perhaps more sort of the firebrand progressives looking for a Warren type.
The question here, though, Andrew, is that even though Clinton's rollout here was probably not as strong as she was hoping it was going to be, do you get the sense that it was rocky enough that it's going to convince somebody else to get in this race? Because one of the other things that Crystal Ball said is that Clinton's been very effective at boxing out other potential rivals, something she thought she had done pretty well in 2008 until the groundswell built up for Barack Obama. So do you think that she's still pretty much got a lock on this nomination if she wants it? Or does a couple of weeks like this really change that equation?
I think they raised the question, but I don't know if they totally opened the door for Martin O'Malley or Elizabeth Warren to come storming in. We are still about a year and a half out, and she can definitely stumble a few more times and open that door all the more. I think it mainly just shows that she does have some vulnerability. Maybe her supporters would say, oh, well, it's just some rust. But it does show that, again, she's not as inevitable. Everything people were projecting onto her as being the inevitable candidate, you know, isn't as surefire.
All right, on to the bad martini now, and we talked about this yesterday on the Three Martini Lunch. In addition to Lois Lerner's emails being quote-unquote missing, that's what the IRS reported on Friday, turns out six other people associated with the investigation, including Nicole Flax, who's a key player in this, their emails are missing as well. And now the bomb is dropped by the IRS that Lois Lerner's crashed hard drive, this according to Politico, has been recycled, making it likely the lost emails of the lightning rod and the Tea Party targeting investigation controversy will never be found, according to multiple sources. They quote Senator Orrin Hatch of Utah saying, we've been informed that the hard drive has been thrown away. And so, Andrew, a couple different ways to look at this. First of all, the fact that they're coming up with this type of explanation that these crashes seem to happen to just the critical people in the investigation. Secondly, the media doesn't seem to care at all, even though there are some other pretty big stories out there. And even Republicans don't care that much. I talked to one member of the House Ways and Means Committee yesterday. I said, what are you going to do about the fact that this evidence is mysteriously missing? Even after he said he didn't believe the IRS story, he's like, well, we'll just work with the documents we've got.
I'll stop short of saying this is a cover-up, but if you were to do a cover-up on this, doesn't this seem sort of like the way you might try and do it, saying that, you know, the hard drives have been recycled and they're gone and you've lost all the emails? But yeah, I mean, the media's sort of looking the other way on it. There are other news stories, but I think it's sort of kind of been the Obama White House playbook, which is the other reason why Republicans are perhaps not as invested in it either, is that they just sort of controversialize, if that's a word, everything to the point where you kind of just have to throw your hands up and say, well, we just have to work with what we got at this point, because now it's just such a mess that even if you try and look into these hard drives, that's going to be an extended process of months, if not years, looking into that. And so you kind of just got to keep your head down and keep going, because these bumps always seem to happen whenever there's an investigation into something the Obama administration's doing.
What do you make of where the investigation goes now? Is this a major kick in the shins to people trying to find the truth? Or do you think there's enough still out there that they'll find something?
I have to imagine there's something out there. I mean, that there would be more. But I think just the fact that, you can't see the correspondences, which has sort of been what a lot of the Republicans have been basing their arguments on or basing their case on, sort of just makes it harder to perhaps find the smoking gun you thought was there.
All right, on to the crazy martini now. And next Tuesday is primary day and primary runoff day in the state of Mississippi. There are a couple other important primaries to keep an eye on as well. But the battle between longtime incumbent Thad Cochran and his Tea Party challenger Chris McDaniel really heating up. Just a couple of weeks ago, it was a razor-tight win, I guess, for McDaniel. He finished with the most votes, but nobody got to 50% because there was a minor third candidate in the race who prevented anybody from getting to 50%. So now, Thad Cochran busting out the big guns. Here's former Packers, Jets, and Vikings quarterback Brett Favre.
I've learned through football that strong leadership can be the difference between winning and losing. And when it comes to our state's future, trust me, Mississippi can win. And win big with Thad Cochran as our strong voice in Washington. Whether it's getting critical funding for our schools, Thad Cochran always delivers, just like he did during Katrina. On June 24th, I encourage you to stand with a proven and respected leader, Thad Cochran. Please tell your family and friends, let's stand with Thad.
The U.S. Chamber is responsible for the content of this advertising.
That mention of the U.S. Chamber will get the McDaniel folks hackles up. And so the one tweet I saw that really cracked me up on this one, Andrew, was Thad Cochran is facing allegations that he doesn't know when to hang it up. So he's bringing out Brett Favre to make a case for him.
That's actually pretty funny. I like that. I also like the idea that we have a bunch of football legends playing major parts in Republican primaries, because over in Georgia, we had Herschel Walker endorse Jack Kingston in that primary. So I guess you can see that's sort of an illustration of football being king in the South and those voices being perhaps influential for people that aren't sure where they're going. They're not sure which way they're leaning. People that maybe wouldn't have been enthused to get out and vote on a primary, especially your second primary date in a month. So, hey, if you're going to pull out a celebrity in Mississippi, it might as well be Brett Favre.
What's your sense on what's going to happen there and what the outcome means for the party?
I feel like I feel differently every day, every time I read something new. So I think if I were to take sort of my rolling average of the past few days, I think Cochran squeaks it out, but again, I wouldn't put any money on that. I think it'll just be a close one, but you know, Cochran seems more invested this time around than he was a month ago, especially probably the Cantor loss, maybe, you know, perked his ears a little bit. But at the same time, you know, McDaniel clearly is sort of the upstart. He could very viably do it as well.
Yes. I'm sure there was quite a bit of interest in the 1.6% of voters who went for the third guy, since it was so close between Cochran and McDaniel. I'm guessing those folks might have gotten a few phone calls if they could be identified in any way. So
let's hope they're Brett Favre fans if you're Thad Cochran.
If you're Thad Cochran, yes. What rebel or bulldog is Chris McDaniel going to come up with in the next couple of days to even
exactly.
That out? It's hard to match Brett Favre in terms of Mississippi football legends. So Archie Manning, maybe. Got to go with old Archie.
There you go.
Andrew, we'll call it there. We'll do it again tomorrow. Thanks.
Thank you. Take it easy.
Andrew Johnson of National Review, and for Jim Garrity today, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.